Well, good afternoon, friends, brothers and sisters, and welcome to our talk, our seminar this afternoon, which is going to address the question, are churchgoers hypocritical? And already somebody's asked me whether or not that includes the people sat here, so that's something you're going to have to make a judgment about. But you don't have to tell me whether or not you suspect yourself of such action. But what we are going to do today is have a look at this question. What we are going to do is have a look at this question, and it's really an A-level question, this. Be honest with you. So if you haven't passed your matriculation, you'd better leave now. No, seriously, it is quite an interesting question, and it goes a lot deeper than just the very simple and plain truths that we have in our Bibles. So I hope you're going to help me with that, because you're going to need to help me achieve that. Okay, well, perhaps a good place to start is to understand what the term hypocrite means, isn't it? Would somebody like to give me a definition for hypocrite?
Somebody who says one thing that does another.
Any other?
Says one thing about somebody and they're doing it themselves as well.
Sorry, what was the first bit?
Criticising
others.
Doing,
yeah, right.
They're doing the same thing and they do the same thing themselves.
I'm not going to write that all out.
Acting apart.
Acting a part rather than acting a part. Pretending to be something you're not, did you say?
Yeah, okay,
these are all good suggestions, which if we now have a look at one I prepared earlier, a dictionary definition, you'll see that you're pretty much on the mark. Person who pretends to have virtues, moral or religious beliefs, principles, etc., that he or she does not actually possess, especially a person whose actions belie stated beliefs. In other words, as has been said here, actually, having said they believe one thing, they're actually doing another. But that first definition is all around religious belief, whereas the second definition is more of a political one. A person who feigns some desirable or publicly approved attitude, especially one whose private life opinions or statements belie his or her public statements. Now, that's actually a state of hypocrisy which is getting a lot of attention these days, isn't it? In the last 10-20 years, the newspapers major on trying to catch people out. When people try and take a role or a position on something and they say, you know, I am in favour of this or against this, they go and have a good dig around and try and find some dirt on the person to say, actually, although you're saying that, you're doing this. So we have a lot of practical examples of hypocrisy and hypocrisy going on in our society. However, some would say, well, the press itself is also hypocritical. I certainly would say that, but anyway, we're not going to go into that, because that's a matter of politics. And it's a matter of what men do, and we're not interested in men Today we're interested in what God has to say about these subjects and his messengers who spoke through the power of the Holy Spirit. So, okay, so this is the meaning of hypocrisy. Hint of it in some of the definitions you gave here, but would anyone like to suggest where this word hypocrisy actually came from? Because it's actually quite illuminating, actually, where it came from.
It's probably a Greek origin.
Yeah, I think it is. It certainly has a Greek etymological background. You know, yeah. It comes from the Greek language. But I was thinking of how the term arose. How did it come into usage?
Hypo means many. So, doesn't it? So, it's like many, taking many positions or something like that. Mythology.
I think Astrid had it in the back of her mind when she gave us her definition.
Acting the part.
Yeah.
Is there some particular man who wrote Greek plays or something? Hippocrates.
Hippocrates, yeah, no. I'm not an expert on Greek philosophers or it's an interesting question. Worth a bit of research when you get home. Now, the origin of the word is quite simply that it was a commonly used technique when people were doing plays, acting out something for the entertainment of others, that they wore masks. If you go back into ancient history, and even just back to Elizabethan times, people frequently used masks in order to quickly achieve some character, particularly if they had to act as an animal or something like that, they would put a mask on. And so what you saw with the mask, you didn't see the person. And that's where hypocrisy has its origins, in that practice of actors or players. So that's worth bearing in mind when we talk about things, because it's actually quite a useful way of thinking about it. It's quite a useful way of looking at hypocrisy, just to say, you know,
it's a mask.
Are you seeing me, or are you seeing the face I'm putting on? Or is that person really like that, or are they acting out of part, as Astrid said? Okay. Now, a distinction that I think we're going to need to make is what we think the difference is between hypocrisy and sin. Are they the same thing?
No.
So how can we sort of understand the difference between hypocrisy and sin?
Sin's disobedience of divine law.
Right, yeah, absolutely. Very good answer.
Is hypocrisy sort of like disobedience to man's law?
That wasn't what I was thinking of.
It's when you're trying to fake it with God. Maybe.
Yeah, it's. I mean, what we're interested in, I mean, there obviously are different ways you could use this in the English language, but what we're interested in is where hypocrisy is used to cover the sin, isn't it?
To cover the sin.
You know, that's the difference between the sin is the sin, the hypocrisy is trying to cover it up. So if you like, you could argue that it's a double sin, if you like, because not only is the person sinning, but they are actually pretending that they aren't sinning. So if I was to say, for example, alcohol consumption is a terrible thing, if you're a follower of Christ, you should not drink alcohol. And then if I secretly sit at home supping my glass of wine or whatever, when you can't see me, then obviously that's hypocrisy. Now, whether or not drinking alcohol is a sin is a slightly different question, and we won't go into that. But so hypocrisy is covering up something, isn't it? Whereas the sin, as Ron has quite rightly said, is the disobedience to divine law. And I've got some passages from the Bible to confirm that we're right in thinking this way. Now, here's the first one, which absolutely resonates with what Ron said, so he gets a gold star for this one. Whosoever committed sin transgresseth also the law. For sin is the transgression of the law. So that's a good definition. That verse gives us a good... There's plenty of other verses that talk about it as well, but that's a particularly good one that the Apostle John wrote in his epistle, defining what sin is. It's breaking God's law. And all men break God's law, as we know. But that's not particularly our subject this week. Now, the next passage we'd like to look at is one of Paul's in Romans. Would someone like to read that for us so that I'm not the only one talking up here?
I'll read it. What shall we say then? Is the law sin? God forbid. Nay, I have not known sin but by the law, for I have not known lust except the law has said, thou shalt not covet.
Right, okay. So, what extra does this tell us? I mean, this isn't about hypocrisy, I don't think. Well, to me, it isn't about hypocrisy anyway, unless you think otherwise. It's if you like, a bit of a amplification about sin. So what is that telling us above just sin is the bald statement that sin is breaking God's law?
I think it implies that if you understand the law, you're then responsible. So God set out right and wrong, and then if you choose to disobey, ignore it.
Yeah.
Responsible.
Yes.
But the law is not sin itself.
I think the thing for me that this tells, which I think you're coming to, is that sin is not just transactional. It's not sort of, if you do that, you sin. Finish. Sin gives you a whole way of thinking and a way of behaving and a way of life. In other words, Paul is saying, well, lust, which is a pretty big subject, isn't it? I mean, it's all about the flesh and all its desires, which covers an enormous amount of ground, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It's not just about sort of one single thing. It's a whole moral code, if you like. Thou shalt not covet. Now, in fact, what Paul is saying is the law that you shouldn't covet or you shouldn't desire things that are other people's or that, you know, are not good for you or whatever. When that law was made, it was really addressing the whole question of human desire, human lust. Now, lust is a bit of an extreme word, isn't it? It tends to be used in quite extreme ways. But all lust is the desire of the flesh for something. So it's not. So sins are not just, you know, a transaction. You know, if I smash that window, I'm sinning because I'm damaging somebody's property. You know, it's not just about one transaction like that. It's about the law of God defines a whole way of life, a whole moral code, if you like. So that when we come to think about hypocrisy and sin, we shouldn't necessarily just think, as I gave you an illustration, didn't I, of drinking alcohol, and that was a bit transactional, wasn't it? It might be better if I was pretending to be very righteous and in fact then leading a life which was dissolute, that was very unrighteous, did all sorts of bad things, whatever they might be. We won't go into those. Okay, let's look at this next one, which now comes to the question of hypocrisy. Would somebody like to read that one for me?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Even so, ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within ye are full of hypocrisy and iniquity.
Right, so these are the words of Jesus, you probably know. And they're pretty hard hitting, aren't they? He's not pulling any punches here. He's talking about a group of people who he's addressing. It's not important to us to know about them, but they were the religious leaders of the time, if you like, scribes and Pharisees, among others. But they were some of the leaders of that time. And he was saying they were hypocrites. And what was he saying was the reason for calling them hypocrites? He's giving a figure here, isn't he? He's giving almost a mini parable, if you like, saying you are like whited sepulchres. And you know, if you walk past a graveyard, it can look very neat and tidy. Sometimes it doesn't, but it can look very neat and tidy, particularly if they're all new tombstones. But underneath, obviously, there is the rottenness and decay of dead people, which you can't see. So in Middle Eastern lands, it was much more common to have sepulchres that were painted with white, and they were like a little cave, if you like, which could either be constructed or a natural cave, and then was blocked off after the body was placed in them, and those were whited, so they all looked nice and shiny with the sun shining on them. They looked great. So, I mean, this is pretty obvious stuff, really, isn't it? But somebody like to give us their take on what Jesus was saying here.
He was saying that outwardly they want to give the impression that they're whiter than white.
Yeah.
Without seeing
self-righteous.
Self-righteous. Yeah.
But actually, underneath it all, they are just like anybody else, not rotten to the core.
Yeah. Right. Well, hopefully, worse than some. Hopefully. Because obviously what Jesus was interested in was his disciples, his followers, the faithful. And the faithful, of course, he wanted to not be like that. Mm. Which doesn't mean, of course, they weren't going to sin, but they were not going to do what scribes and Pharisees did, was act out this part of pretending they were very righteous, but underneath it all, actually being very iniquitous. Because he elsewhere, he accuses the scribes and Pharisees of the sorts of things they did. Like, they showed no love and concern for others. They persecuted people, the poor, and widows, and people like that. So he actually gives illustrations of that wickedness. So it wasn't just your run-of-the-mill sins. I mean, they were into sin big time. Because, actually, you have to be a pretty hard-nosed person, don't you, to persecute the weakest elements in society, but that's what some of these scribes and Pharisees were doing. And yet they were pretending, by standing in the places and sitting in the high seats and doing all these things, that they were above reproach. They were above reproach. And in these days, there was no Daily Mirror or Sun or something reporter going around catching them out. Because people were frightened of the leaders, generally speaking, and gave way to them. But the truth of the matter was, which Jesus could see absolutely, was that they were hypocrites. Okay, so I think we can see now quite easily, can't we, the difference between hypocrisy itself and sin. Arguably, hypocrisy is a sin, but it's used... The action of hypocrisy used to hide, to cover up sin. Now we haven't addressed this question of whether churchgoers are hypocrites, because really it's a bit of a sort of a one-dimensional question, because it suggests you either say yes or no. And I hope by the time we've looked at what God has to say about hypocrisy and understood hypocrisy and the difference between hypocrisy and sin, that we then can make a balanced judgment on this question of whether or not churchgoers are hypocrites. So what we'd like to do now is have a bit of a look at the teaching of Jesus on hypocrisy. Now, we're not going to look at a lot of passages. I've just picked out one particular one which I think helps us to understand what Jesus had to say about hypocrisy. We've already seen a bit of that in the one we looked at a moment ago. But here is another one, and this is from Mark's Gospel. Someone like to read that for us?
I don't mind. Okay. Then the Pharisees and scribes asked him, "Why walk not thy disciples according to the tradition of the elders, but eat bread with unwashen hands?" And he answered and said unto them, "Well hath Isaiah prophesied of you hypocrites, as it is written, This people honoureth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Howbeit in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandment of God, ye hold the tradition of men as the washing of pots and cups, and many other such like things ye do." And he said unto them, "Full well ye reject the commandment of God, that ye may keep your own tradition."
Right, thank you. Now that's actually, there's a lot in that, isn't there, when you look at it? There's a lot of guidance in that. Around this whole question of hypocrisy. Now, let's start with just understanding together what it was that Jesus was criticizing, condemning. What was Jesus condemning?
Their hearts.
Yeah, which are washing of hands.
Yes.
The tradition of the elders as opposed to what God had commanded.
That's right. So what had happened, if we go back to very basics and imagine how this all arose, is the disciples were eating having not washed their hands. And with the Pharisees, this was sinful, if you like. Disobedience, breaking Moses' law. According to their traditions, because it doesn't necessarily say this explicitly in the law, they would go and wash their hands before they ever ate anything. And this was, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's not bad to wash your hands before you eat. I'm sure when you were a child, that's what your mum and dad used to tell you to do. Go and wash your hands. I'm not sure all of us do it before having a meal these days, but anyway, that's what used to happen. And so there's nothing wrong with that. But Jesus took this as an example, that the Pharisees were worrying about whether or not the disciples had washed their hands, but neglecting other more important things. And what's he saying they were neglecting?
Commandments, God.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, the scribes and the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the lawyers, all those, that sort of ruling hierarchy, had the law of Moses, which was known to the Jews as the Torah, you probably know that, it was known as the Torah, but they had added to it a far greater volume of writings than the original set of writings, all about saying exactly what you had to do in order to comply with it. So, for example, regarding the Sabbath, it said what you could and couldn't do on the Sabbath day, enormous amount of detail. How far you could walk, and all sorts of things like that. So these were not in the original law, but they became their tradition, and they were hot on everyone complying with those traditions. And again, they were, for the most part, but not entirely, for the most part, they were in sympathy with the law, because they were constructing the law, but they became a consuming interest to them. They became only interested in their traditions. And what does that underlying part say to us?
"There's people on earth move their lips, but their heart is far from them."
Yeah, so they may have all these traditions, but was their heart clean? Was their heart right with God? And Jesus is saying, no, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. So before you start worrying about whether the disciple was washing their hands, or whether you've washed your hands or washed a pot, get these basic things right. And he says elsewhere that they were neglecting things like the law and justice and mercy and basic things like that. Now, you remember I said to you, when you looked at that command of covetousness, not to be covetous, it goes a lot deeper than just any one thing. It goes to a whole way of life, a whole way of behaving, a whole morality, a whole attitude. And that's one of the problems, isn't it, with the society we live in, is that there is no common agreement on morality. In many cases, morality is, as long as it's within the law of the land, which is pretty generous these days, there's not much you can't do these days, providing you don't sort of, you know, violently attack someone else or something like that. Providing you're within the law of the land, you can operate your own set of morals. You know, it's up to you, really. There's nothing to say, this is the way you should behave and live. The only thing that comes anywhere near it is political correctness. And political correctness is, as we know, exactly that. That again is a tradition of men. It's based upon men's attitudes to what is right and proper, not on what God's teaching is. Okay, so Jesus is very, very plain about this, that we should certainly not be in the position the scribes and Pharisees were of rejecting God's commands and taking on our own traditions. Now, we might think, well, we're not in danger of doing that. But I think it's fair to say that all human beings have a tendency to be creatures of habit. I think we all have habits, don't we? We all have habits that we tend to get up at a certain time, for example. We tend to approach having breakfast in a certain way or whatever. Or we, in the evening, we have a particular routine where we do certain things at certain times, or we... we clean our teeth at certain times, after a meal or whatever it is. You know, we have these little practices and we feel uncomfortable if we don't follow them. Now, it can be, if we're not careful, the same with serving God, that we might be guilty of thinking that by following our little practices of being obedient to God, that that makes us obedient. But God is not interested in what's on the surface, which is what hypocrisy is all about. He's interested on where our heart is. So our heart has to be in it. It's not that we don't need to do these things. Of course we do. We need to do stuff. And having habits, like, say, having a habit of each day reading a passage from the Bible is a very good habit, one that we should follow. But it's no good doing it if it's just a compliance, a ritual. Oh, well, yeah, I've read, that's done, forget. You know, it needs to have an impact upon us. We need to take it in, we need to think about it, and we need to apply it in our lives, don't we? Otherwise, we're just honouring God with our lips and not with our hearts. Everyone happy with that? Anyone want to add anything of their own thoughts on what Jesus is saying here?
Do you think it sums up religion generally today, isn't it? I'm not saying us, or it could be us as well. That sort of tells us what the churches are like today, doesn't it? Teaching commandments, tradition of men, is almost like the commands of God.
Yes, yes, yes. Certainly there are plenty of... church practices that have come in over the last 50 or 100 years which are actually contrary to what God has taught, and the churches say, "Oh, well, this is we live in an enlightened age. We are enlightened. We are living in a way which is modern and consistent with modern standards." And they are reinterpreting, so they're almost rewriting what Jesus said in order to make it fit with their view of the world, which is very much a humanistic view of the world. It's a human-centric view rather than a God-centric view. The only way we can get a God-centric view is through the Bible, isn't it? Because that's all we have. We have the God's revelation in the Bible. Okay, there's another place which I thought we'd just have a little look at, which talks quite a bit about hypocrisy, or he talks about hypocrisy in a slightly different way. It's in James' epistle. Someone like to read that with us?
If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like the wave of the sea, driven by the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways.
Right. Now, you could say double-mindedness can very easily be hypocrisy, because you've got one mind and you're practicing another mind, so you've got one, you're in two minds. And sometimes people are not 100% hypocritical, but they switch between, you know, so they have a persona, for example, and this starts to bear on our question, maybe they have a persona when they're in church and with their fellow churchgoers, and they have a different persona when they're at work. When they're no longer with those people, they're now with people who have no, perhaps, have no particular religious outlook. And so perhaps they speak very properly when they are in the church, but they swear and blaspheme when they're in the workplace. Now that is a double-mindedness, isn't it? That they're moving between two different positions. One time they're sort of saying, "Oh no, one shouldn't swear," and the next time they're saying, "Oh, it doesn't matter," because, you know. So they're wavering between those two points of view. And I'm sure we have all met people who can be like that. People who perform in public office are often like it. In public office, generally speaking, again, if we stick with that example, people, when they're giving a speech or sending out some sort of document, they don't swear and curse, do they? But maybe in their private life, they do that freely. So again, you know, it's quite possible to have this double standard, if you like. And double standards are a form of hypocrisy, I think. Let's have a look at another passage from this same epistle, which talks a little bit more about it. I'll read this one to you. "Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Be afflicted and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up." Now, what more is this telling us, do you think, about double-mindedness?
Well, I think it's the purity of the heart, isn't it, from what's within.
Yeah. A pure heart will not be hypocritical, will it? Because a pure heart
isn't like that.
You know, what you see is what you get, sort of thing, you know? You behave in a way that actually comes from the heart. Mm. So when you say things, you really mean them. So you don't say, oh, I'll come round and see you sometime, fully intending never to go. You don't do that. Or, oh, I'll do that for you, but actually, knowing full well you actually won't get around to it, and somebody else will end up doing it. All those sorts of things, they're trivial, but they are all adding up to this question of purity of heart and whether or not what you represent yourself as and what you say, what you hold out, is actually true, or whether you're just saying, oh, I'll come and see you sometime because there's a group of people there and they think, oh, that's nice and tall, you know, he's a nice chap, he's going to go and see them. But actually, the person who might be expecting a visit, no, guess what? Because, you know, now I'm not talking about here mistakes that we make because we forget or something like that. I'm not talking about those sorts of mistakes because we are all guilty of those sorts of things, but I'm talking about where we just speak loosely, you know, we don't really mean what we say. Because if we really meant it, we'd do it, wouldn't we? And if we really meant it, a good test for that is, supposing we were saying that to the Lord Jesus Christ, we'd jolly well make sure we did what we said, wouldn't we? Now, in fact, if we're talking, sorry, we're going off a public lecture here a bit, more into an exhortation, but you know, if we're talking to another brother or sister, then we are talking to Christ. Because that's how we serve Christ. So we should, it's better not to say it if we're not in a position to do it. Better to be honest and say, well, I wish I could come and see you, but I can't. If there's some reason why you can't. That's better than saying, oh yeah, I will come and see you, and then not doing it. You know, it's like that parable, isn't it, about the worker in the vineyard. And one said he'd go, and he did, and the other one said he wouldn't go, and he did. So, but there's one other thing in that passage also.
Humility.
At the very end. Sorry?
Humility.
Yeah, humility. And that's where we want to end up, because one of the characteristics of hypocrisy is pride and showmanship, isn't it? Showing off, you know. And we've seen plenty of that in the news lately, haven't we, with the American elections. People strutting round the stage saying, oh, this, that and the other. We won't go into that. What they've been saying. But, you know, they're full of pride and arrogance, aren't they? They're full of it. And people want them to be, in a way, I think it's fair to say. You know, people respond to that sort of arrogance in a strange sort of way. Sticks in my throat, and I suspect also in yours, but a lot of people seem to go for it. Otherwise, why do they all vote for them? They do. But God's interested in humility, and humility, again, is strongly tied to honesty. Because if you're humble, you recognise what you are, and what sort of thing you are, what sort of person you are, what sort of creature you are, which is, in God's eyes, a sinful creature, isn't it? So let's just finish up with a couple of passages which bear on this. Because this tells us about the sort of person, if it's not a hypocrite, because Jesus was condemning the scribes and the Pharisees for being hypocrites, what sort of person does God look to? What sort of person is God interested in? And this first passage is from the Psalms. Volunteer to read that one.
The Lord is known to them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all.
Yes, so whatever happens to us, if we truly set our heart on God and obedience to God and his Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, whatever happens to us, whatever we suffer, whatever afflictions, whatever problems, whatever persecutions, whatever difficulties, whatever they may be, then ultimately God will deliver us from them all, because he's offered the hope of eternal life, hasn't he? Which puts, you know, everything that we might be worried about out of account, doesn't it? You know, oh, I haven't got enough money, or oh, I've got this pain in my leg, or whatever it is, whatever worry we may have, or I've had an argument with my friend, they're all just nothing really, aren't they, compared with what God has offered us. And we need to be contrite and humble in order to please him. And one last passage on that same subject. For all those things hath mine hand made, and those things have been, saith the Lord, but, this is a bit we're interested in, to this man will I look. So is this who God will look to? Even to him that is poor and of contrite spirit and trembleth at my word. Now, people who are like that are not going to be hypocrites, are they? They're not going to be arrogant, they're not going to be proud, they're not going to be acting out a part, showing off in front of people, pretending to be what they're not, are they? They're going to be humble, God-fearing people who try their very best, even though they often fail, try their very best to do what is pleasing to God. So, this is what we all need to do. If we're wearing a mask, take it off and be who you really are, and make sure that person we are is the person that is pleasing to God. So, are churchgoers hypocritical? They might be, they might not, I don't know. It's entirely possible to be hypocritical, because when you have strong beliefs, then it's a big test, isn't it? Because you've got strong beliefs, you have to deliver them. And not wear a mask like that girl was in that rather curious picture. So if you are wearing a mask, take it off. Don't be hypocritical. Be yourself and make sure, as we all need to, make sure that you're behaving in a humble, contrite way, doing your best to serve the commandments of God, and then you won't be hypocritical. It's not actually difficult in the sense that, it's fairly clear what we have to do, but it's very easy for the human flesh to deceive us and to slip into an acting part and behaving in a way that's not consistent, that is double-minded. Any questions before we finish? Or anything anyone would like to add? No? Then thank you very much. Thank you for joining in. Thank you.